Welcome to Legal News and Review, recipient of the Florida Bar Award of Excellence, and featuring Michael Santucci, co-chair of the Intellectual Property Division of the Broward Bar. From the law firm of Santucci Priori, practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law, with your moderator, Philip Bell. And hosts and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law and a syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his field of practice. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket for today's broadcast, bankruptcy can be a complex and emotionally draining process. But as debtors, you've got rights. As creditors, you have rights under the bankruptcy laws. Today, from the law firm of Kevin C. Gleason, PA, is attorney Kevin Gleason, who will be educating us on our rights in the bankruptcy law, both on the creditor and debtor side. I'd like to first say good afternoon to Michael Santucci. Good afternoon, Mike.
How are you, Phil? And I also want to thank Pam Stratton from Veritex Legal Solution. Brought some cookies and some things over from the court reporting company.
Some good stuff, and, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
if I bring cookies, will you thank me next time?
You got it.
Well, let me not forget you. Good evening, Gary Singer.
That's
legal
easy
panel
for you
host.
To say, Phil. Hey, how you doing today, Phil?
Doing good. And also like to welcome special legal panel host Gary Astro.
Thanks for having me back, Phil.
Appreciate it.
To hear they let you out, Gary.
They did. I got out last night, and it seems like forever.
I was surprised they let you back in here.
I'm surprised they let me out. You know.
You know, whether you're a doctor or even a lawyer or fast food worker, bankruptcy has no boundaries. Since the Great Recession of 2007, people and businesses have had hard times paying their debts. And I'd like to welcome Kevin Gleason. Good afternoon, Kevin.
Good afternoon.
You know, Kevin, many of us sit up at nights, especially when bills are due, and we don't know what to do. And those bills keep coming, and they keep coming. People have actually killed themselves over stupid bills.
Well, that's because they can't keep the phrase out of their heads. Get Kevin Gleason on the phone when your checks are clearing by faith alone.
On the debtor side, because you represent on both sides, you understand what you're up against if you're representing a debtor or you're protecting a creditor's rights as well. But what is bankruptcy for the debtor?
Well, for the debtor, it's a fresh start. And that can be a fresh start for an individual who's just got a pile of debts they can't pay. It can be a fresh start for a business that might have had a hiccup. You get a restaurant and the DOT decides to tear up the street in front of the restaurant for six months. Might have been a great restaurant, might have been doing very well, and all of a sudden people can't even get in the door. And that's a typical situation, or I call it financial lightning. No matter how rich you are and how smart you are, you can get hit by financial lightning. You know, I ask people when I do public speaking, I say, is anybody in this room smarter than a former Secretary of the Treasury? I don't get any hands. I say, is anybody in this room richer than the people who were the richest men in the United States? I don't get any hands. And I say, well, the richest men in the United States filed Chapter 7, and two former Treasury Secretaries have filed Chapter 7. So if you are not smarter or richer than them, you might be a candidate.
But in my day, bankruptcy was a dirty word. You know, whispered, oh, they went bankrupt. But now it seems like it's just a matter of, like, divorce nowadays. It's just, it's commonplace.
The history of bankruptcy is rather interesting. I mean, the earliest recorded law on a stone tablet is a bankruptcy law. Bankruptcy has its roots in the Bible, at least, the book
of
Nehemiah.
Are you being serious about that?
Absolutely.
Because you're not smiling.
No, absolutely. It's thousands of years old. In fact, it was one of the translations done with Rosetta Stone. And in the Bible...
Wait a minute. The translation said, you owe me money?
Basically, yeah.
How'd they get software to work back then?
They actually used a stone tablet.
No.
When you say it is...
The Rosetta Stone. That's how I learned
it. No pun intended on the tablet.
Yeah. So in the Bible, in 750 B.C., the book of Nehemiah is the first chapter 7 in the Bible. And that's... I send folks there and they say, oh, I feel bad. My pastor said, you know, this is against my religion. I say, what religion is that? If it's Judaism or Christianity, you better read your scripture because it ain't against your religion.
So that must be why Trump likes the Bible.
Well, he misquotes it.
Wait a minute.
How can you still be so bitter?
Your team lost. Get over it. They can try again for the playoffs.
We don't say 2 Corinthians, okay? We say 2 Corinthians.
Well, do you think that now that we have a president of the United States that used the bankruptcy law several times, do you think the stigma is that helps erase the stigma from years and years ago that Phil was talking about?
Well, I think
the stigma's gone.
Yeah. The stigma had to be on its way out when giants like Eastern Airlines and Pan Am filed, Braniff filed more than once. I mean, these were big names that people saw go through bankruptcy. And then you had Chrysler that should have done bankruptcy, and the government bailed them out until the second time, you know, Chrysler 2.0 bankruptcy, and then really Obama bailed them out but through the bankruptcy court. And so these things, you know, being in the news, yes. But you go back to the earliest bankruptcy act we have, the first treasurer of the United States was in debtor's prison in Pennsylvania, and Congress passed the Bankruptcy Act to get him out and then repealed it. Okay, it was on the books for like a year, right? So we didn't have a permanent bankruptcy act until 1898. And since 1898, we've had it continuously, major renovation in 1978. But then it's been tinkered with so much since then by special interests that you barely recognize the code the way it is now.
For those of us, and I'll include myself, that don't fully understand or even partially understand, what would you the briefest criteria for somebody who's a candidate for bankruptcy? How would you describe the circumstances?
Good question. Great question.
Well, until 2005, there really was the answer was anybody who wanted to could. Since 2005, if a person has primarily consumer debt, they have to pass what we refer to as the monthly income, current monthly income test, which compares the household income against the median income of the same size household in the state, and that's a number that's adjusted 2 or 3 times a year. So we have to compare the income to make sure they qualify for Chapter 7.
Is there a ratio of some type that debt to?
No. No, there's credit? There's no balance sheet test. It's an income test. So a person can owe as little as what I call their pain threshold. You know, some people can take the phone calls and the letters and the lawsuits, and it doesn't bother them until it gets to be, you know, $100,000. Some people, they're getting done for $15,000, they can't sleep. So I call that the threshold of pain. Whenever you decide you can't take it anymore, that's when you can file a bankruptcy. Then the question is, can we qualify you?
Qualifying and filing, obviously, right. Two completely different
things. Right. So if I can't qualify you for a 7, I have to dump you into the 13 or 11. My clientele tends to be too high to qualify for 13 because there's a debt limit in 13. So we either do 7 or 11.
Interesting.
Well, those are completely different ball games, obviously, right? I mean, a Chapter 11 can go on for years and become rather big litigation.
They can, but the individual Chapter 11s, while it is a square peg in a round hole because Congress tried to make it like a Chapter 13, but they didn't quite do a very good job on that, an individual Chapter 11 can be 12, 13 months. You know, the thing is, back to the qualifications for 7, while Congress passed this test in 2005, so we've done, you know, hundreds of cases since then. There's only been, I always have to look at my legal assistant. I think we've had 2 cases that we weren't able to figure out a way around it to get people qualified. Because, you know, the income test looks back 6 months. So many people have seasonal income, teachers in South Florida, seasonal income. So there may be a sweet spot in the year when their 6 months income qualifies them. And if we waited and if they got a Christmas bonus, it could really screw us up.
So they don't average it out. So timing is everything.
Timing is everything. And you're a criminal attorney. Isn't that the same in your world?
Timing is everything in every world, probably.
That's right.
So,
that's
yes,
right.
I would agree.
But what's the point? You know, so if you're broke and you owe everyone money, you can't get blood from a stone. So why go through bankruptcy?
Well, because it is a fresh start. So, you know, if you can imagine that you have so much debt that if you get out of bed and work, you know, a 60-hour week and make that money and you still will never pay off the debt, you lose your incentive to work.
Or your ability to buy a new car or a house or property or finance anything.
Exactly, because if you don't think that you can keep what you're going to get, then you might as well move to a country that taxes 100%, right? And then you lose your incentive to work hard. So I've had an example. I had a client who owed the government a couple $300,000 in federal income taxes, which you can discharge in bankruptcy, but timing is everything. And he came to me, and he was just a broken man. He was a commercial real estate broker, and he just couldn't do any deals. So we put him through a Chapter 7, and within the next 2 years, he paid the government more in taxes because of the new business that he did than he owed them on the old taxes, which they never would have collected. And that's a perfect example of what a fresh start can do for someone.
Sure, but what's it do for the creditors?
They get bupkis.
Well,
but yeah. you look at a creditor, you know, take a credit card. The average credit cards, 97% of their customers pay their bills. 3% don't. So you're a credit card customer for 15 years. They've made a bucket of money from you. So they lose the last, you know, year or two of your charges. And then if they're smart, after your bankruptcy discharge, they give you another credit card. And they make money from you for the next 15 years, you know?
Sure. Well, obviously they're staying in business. But, you know, the fact is, though, doesn't that drive up pricing for everyone else?
Well, that's what interest is about. Now, do you really think that a 18% interest credit card is just making up for the 3% of people who don't pay their bills? No. The most profitable
section.
Yeah,
I mean, they're being very profitable.
Right. The most profitable section of any bank is the credit card division.
Sure.
So they're not losing money on the people going bankrupt.
Well, they're losing money on it, but they're making up for it in other ways,
right.
Obviously.
Right, right. But, you know, consumer credit is really not what drives, at least in my practice, not what it doesn't
no,
drive.
It's the, health the and finals. Divorce, right?
No. Actually, I'm glad you brought that up. It is an urban myth that bankruptcies are caused by medical debts. In fact, I just sent Phil an article the other day.
On NPR that they did. Go ahead.
Well, actually, I was correcting NPR.
Right.
So the medical debt thing goes back to Elizabeth Warren. You've heard of her?
Elizabeth? Yeah, she's one of Michael's friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
She wrote a book when she was a Harvard law professor.
She's integrity.
was that the name of her dog?
She did a study about bankruptcy. And in there, she said that most bankruptcies had medical debt. But that doesn't mean that most bankruptcies are caused by medical debt. So I'll get somebody who owes, you know, $750,000 and they didn't pay their last doctor bill for, you know, $100, or they got some tests they didn't know about for $200. Yeah, there's medical debt in there. It didn't cause the bankruptcy.
Well, the dirty truth is, I mean, you pay the hospital district $10 a month, they'll leave you alone.
That's right.
You know, and you know, there's no need to. So what are the bankruptcies caused by?
The major causes of bankruptcy are divorce. You got that one right.
Mm-hmm.
And interruption in income. Either, you know, somebody loses their job, gets downsizing their job, their jobs get sent offshore, which we know is not going to happen anymore. But income interruption and major life
problems.
So it's
not so much people ran it up not to pay it, but they were living their life, and then a life problem occurred, and they couldn't afford it anymore.
That's right. You know, everyone thinks they're going to be rich in 6 months, so running it up isn't a bad thing. They think they're going to be able to pay it.
So besides the fresh start, how's that different from restructuring like a 13?
Well, a 13, you are in bankruptcy for usually a minimum of 36 months, a maximum of 60 months. So if you're looking at the fresh start, in a 13, you don't get the discharge till the end.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, let's take somebody who files a bankruptcy in March of 2017. If they're doing a five-year plan, 60-month plan, they're going to get their discharge in April of 2023. And that means that'll be on their credit report until 2033 because it's 10 years after discharge. So if they do the Chapter 7 in March of 2017, they'll get their discharge in May of 2017, and that'll stay on their credit report till 2027 instead of 2033. So how long do you want this to be hanging over your head? Also, Chapter 13, I tend not to steer people that way, and there's other bankruptcy lawyers who will disagree with me, but I think Chapter 13 makes a lot of promises it doesn't keep.
Yeah, that's I think, a minority view. Well, can you go into that a little more?
Sure. If you look at the failure rate in Chapter 13, that's where
huge.
I say it makes promises it doesn't keep.
Yeah.
Because I can explain to you what the great benefits are if you make the same payment for the next 5 years. How many of us can guarantee we're going to keep our level of income for the next 5 years?
Yeah,
something
true.
Happens. You get sick. You lose your job again. And so
yeah, but you can do an amended plan.
You can do amended plans. Yes, you can. But there's issues of what I refer to as the threshold amount. The minimum amount you have to pay in a Chapter 13 is what you would have lost in a Chapter 7. So in other words, you have to do a mini Chapter 7 in your head and say, okay, well, I have this many assets and only this amount are exempt, so I would have wound up paying my creditors $25,000 in a Chapter 7. Well, that $25,000 is what you got to pay over the life of the Chapter 13, and the Chapter 13 trustee takes 10%. So it actually can kind of wind up costing more. Besides, the attorney's fees are more. And the inconvenience is more just being in. You really want to be in bankruptcy for 3 years? I can get you out in 4 months? I don't think so. So I compare and contrast.
I mean, some people obviously, you know, have an emotional attachment to their home or another asset.
Right. And I try to explain to them that their house doesn't wag its tail when they come home.
Yeah, it's bricks and sticks.
Right.
Clearly.
And so, yeah, you point out the major reasons for filing a 13 or curing arrears on a home mortgage or car payment. If they have assets that are so far of exemptions, they want to take the time to pay for them, or if they don't qualify for Chapter 7 because their income's too high.
What about transfer? I'm sorry.
Well, before we get to that, and how would that compare to like a Chapter 11?
Chapter 11 is it has no debt limit. So in a Chapter 13, if a person owes roughly about $1.2 million in secured and roughly about $380,000 in unsecured, and those numbers vary, they adjust periodically. But if you're over those numbers, you cannot file a Chapter 13. So if you have those 13-ish issues, but your house happens to be a $2 million house instead of a sure. $500,000 house, then you had to do it through Chapter 11.
But it
11.
Has the same downfalls?
Same chapter negatives? Chapter 11 doesn't have a minimum or maximum time limit. What it has is when Congress tried to make it 13-ish, they said, well, if an unsecured creditor objects, you got to put 5 years of your income into a plan. But that's only if the unsecured creditor objects.
Gotcha.
So you can get, I use the term get away with, in a Chapter 11, you can get away with a shorter one. There may be times when you want to stretch a mortgage out 20 or 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's possible.
So it's more flexible.
Much more flexible.
So the best way is I just give my brother all my stuff and do a 7.
Sure, then he becomes a defendant in a fraudulent conveyance case.
But it works. What are brothers for?
Hey, yeah, on Aruba.
And you lose your discharge, and then you need Gary to get you out of jail.
Nah.
I've got one client who spent 7 years in federal penitentiary because he thought it was cute to steal $2 million during his bankruptcy case.
So how's that work? I mean,
well, he blamed me.
They always blame the lawyer. That went without saying.
Yeah. I got the visit from the U.S. Attorney's Office, you know.
I was more along the lines, how does the fraudulent transfer stuff work?
Fraudulent transfer stuff works in the bankruptcy code. The reach back period is 2 years, but the bankruptcy code also incorporates by reference state law. So if the transfer occurs in Florida, as you know, 4 years is the reach back in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you do a fraudulent transfer, do it more than 365 days before your bankruptcy, because if you do it more than 365 days before your bankruptcy, you can get your discharge, forgiveness of debt. Then your brother just becomes a defendant in a fraudulent conveyance case, and the trustee brings it back in, pays something to your creditors, and that's fine.
What happens to pending lawsuits? Say Gary Singer's representing a building owner who's got the property financed, and the bank files a foreclosure action. How could bankruptcy help that building owner?
Well, they call me about 48 hours before the foreclosure sale.
That much?
Yeah, you know.
That late in the game.
It depends.
Huh?
No,
that early.
Yeah, maybe Friday.
It's usually in the morning.
Sometimes Friday night.
I'd be concerned, when I got the complaint.
Friday night for a Monday morning foreclosure, you know. And then we file a short petition, something, 7-Eleven, whatever, depending on if it's individual or business, whatever. And it stops the sale.
You get 3 bonus months.
We get a little breathing room, yes. We get 14 days to do complete schedules. We usually get an extension of that. And then if it's an 11, we have a 120-day exclusive period to propose a plan. If it's a 7, then the trustee takes over that property. And so it depends on the circumstances.
Kevin, do the current bankruptcy laws provide any incentive for somebody to run up personal debt and then think, I'm going to run it up and discharge it? Is there any incentive or are there safeguards built in to avoid that?
Well, folks always ask me, can I do that? And I say, what are you going to buy? Well, I'm going to buy a big screen TV. And I say, well, then your big screen TV is going to be part of your bankruptcy. So you just did all this stuff.
Meaning you're going to have to get rid of it?
Well, you got to list it in your schedule. So you go out and buy a $4,000. I had this happen this last year. People went out and they bought, I think it was a $7,000 TV. Except when they put it in their bankruptcy schedules, it was a $400 TV.
Because
it was used, you know.
It was used for a few weeks,
right?
Wasn't
it?
It
was used, right? So, of course, the bankruptcy trustee figured this out. Now, I don't go to your house and look at your TV. But the bankruptcy trustee said, well, have them take pictures of stuff and send me the pictures. So they sent the pictures. The guy said, this is not a $400 TV. They almost lost their discharge. We made a deal with the trustee. Everything was fine. But that's just stupid. So the disincentive is that for the purchase of luxury goods prior to the filing of the bankruptcy, there's a look-back period, and there's an automatic presumption of non-dischargeability if you go over certain limits. So there's disincentive. Now, if you do it years in advance and you depreciate all the stuff,
then you're good.
You're good.
You know, one of the use cases for Chapter 7 I've seen that seemed interesting was someone who's approaching retirement and has a heavy debt load. And then you clean up the debt load, and then they can focus on stocking away some money from retirement. Because my understanding is you don't lose all your savings from retirement. When
401s, IRAs, they coast through annuities, you know, whole life insurance policies, they're all protected. But one thing that, you know, you bring that up, the end of life stuff. What about somebody who knows they're going to die in 6 months? And they have debts, and they don't want their debts to be paid out of their estate.
Yeah.
Hey, put them through a 7.
That's a viable. So you can use a Chapter 7 for the end-of-life stuff and for estate, for retirement planning.
Hey, they only have to live long enough to go to their meeting of creditors.
They can drop dead the next day and they're good.
So what actually happens if someone dies before the meeting of creditors?
I've actually had that happen. Before the meeting, usually the case will get dismissed. The rules provide that the court can either let the case be completed or dismiss the case, depending on the circumstances. And I've had, unfortunately, I had it in Chapter 11. I had my principal die. I had that happen. Oh, my, that's going to make me sound really bad. I've had that happen three times.
Oh, wow.
And we completed the cases. Actually, I confirmed a publicly traded company in a Chapter 11 where the chief executive officer died during the case.
Huh. Well, Mike knows this. My doctor gave me 6 months to live.
Okay, we'll file you tomorrow.
And then he gave me a bill.
Is that more than six months ago?
He gave me a bill.
Relevant.
But he gave me the bill, and I said, I can't pay this. He says, all right, I'll give you another 6 months.
That's all right.
I got everybody
but
here.
Don't forget to cite. That's Rodney Dangerfield.
I'll tell you. I get no respect. Not even my yo-yo comes back to me. But bankruptcy is an option. Listen, it used to be you were ruined, literally. You couldn't get credit for 10 years if you're lucky. It used to be that way, from what I understand from others that I've spoken to. But now it's different. The companies are, you could get a car in just a few months. Grant you pay more.
Finance a house, get a mortgage loan a month out of bankruptcy.
I've got sources that will get you the car while you're in bankruptcy.
Wow. When did that change? Because as I recall, Phil, it was years before you were creditworthy.
Yeah. Now it depends. Best time to give someone credit, right? Because they can't go bankrupt again for a while.
That's a good point.
It is, but I'm sure.
But they can default.
But Gary knows the Fannie Freddie rules, and my wife knows these better than I do. I think it's 4 years after the terminal event, be that the foreclosure sale is the beginning, and then you count 4 years and you do Fannie Freddie. Non-conventional, it runs everything from first day out, first day discharge. I get people say first day discharge.
Unions. Yeah. Credit unions, if they know you know where you work and you're otherwise good, they'll give it to you.
If they want to lend and you're willing to
One tip I want to you call an idiot with a pen a co-signer. If I go bankrupt and I have somebody a co-sign for me,
they're hoes.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, we call us friends, family, and fools. But the deal is, in a Chapter 7, the debt, it just all goes on to the cosigner.
Wow.
They were responsible for the whole debt from the beginning. Now they realize it. In a 13, there's a thing called a co-debtor stay. So say a $10,000 car, you still owe $10,000 on the car, and the Chapter 13 plan provides to pay $7,000 because the car's not worth $10,000 anymore. The co-debtor stay protects that cosigner from the $10,000. Now they're only going to be exposed to $3,000.
But it's joint and several for the cosigner.
Right.
If I'm going through a divorce, and a friend of mine asked me to type this up, if I'm going through a divorce.
Another one, Phil?
I'm telling you. How will my ex-spouse bankruptcy filing affect me?
The ex-spouse is going to file.
If I'm going through a divorce, how will my ex-spouse filing bankruptcy affect me?
I have to consult with that person because it depends on whether there's joint debt. What are the joint assets? Has the divorce been finalized? Can we still do tenancy by the entirety?
So it depends.
There's a lot of analysis there. I get a lot of calls from folks who are in the process, and they say, well, should we get divorced before we file bankruptcy or after? And I say, well, first you got to sign this waiver because now you're asking me to give the two of you advice that might be contrary to each other. I mean, one of you might have a fraudulent conveyance claim against the other. You never know. And then I'll do the analysis. Same way as, you know, when you do your taxes, you're married, you do your taxes, you say to your accountant, look, give me the taxes. Well, how much am I going to owe if we file together? How much are going to owe if we file separately? You do the analysis.
But in seriousness, getting back to the cosigner, you could do something called a reaffirmation, correct?
A reaff, yes. But that doesn't affect the cosigner's liability.
Evan, how does someone know when it's time to see a bankruptcy attorney?
They don't. It's usually too late. They'll do all this stupid stuff.
Okay.
You know, we were talking about people doing transactions without
lawyers.
Pay it
off out of their retirement.
Here's a great one. I'll put my daughter on my house so that I don't have to go through probate, right? And they don't know they didn't have to anyway.
Yeah.
But now the daughter, they didn't realize she was being sued, and now the judgment goes against the daughter. The daughter files bankruptcy, and the trustee sells the house out from under the mom, takes half the money, and uses it to pay the debts. Is that smart? No. I see that stuff all the time.
Yeah. Such like that bought me my first Jaguar.
Unfortunately, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to ask if somebody has a bankruptcy question, how do they contact Kevin Gleason?
Well, it's really difficult because my email address is bankruptcylawyer@AOL.com. And for those millennials out there, AOL used to be how you dialed up to send each other emails.
Yeah, that sounds good. I remember that.
At AOU, at my Twitter is at IOU not.
We got to unlock it. You got to unlock it. I tried to follow you. You got to unlock it.
I'll do that. And we're Florida Bankruptcy Group, and our website is debts180.com.
All right. It's a good turnaround.
You know, it goes by so fast. And, Kevin, you have such a great reputation, and you really care about your clients. You know, we met just as one of your clients was showing up. And it sounded like it was a friend of yours, but it was a client. So you treat your clients like friends.
Right.
That's a beautiful thing. I mean that. Gary?
Well, I'll say, you know, just as a final comment on the subject, you know, having done a lot of work through the foreclosure, I walked into it when the bust happened thinking bankruptcy was a bad word. But what I found out very quickly is it was an amazingly good tool to allow people to move on with their life. And it shouldn't even have a stigma. The stigma should be someone, you know, has the sense to know when to move on. It should be a good stigma. So bankruptcy is not a bad thing, and Kevin's a great attorney. I've personally dealt with him on a case before, and it was a pleasure. It was a while ago. For the life of me, I can't remember which case it was, but I remember dealing with you. So I want to thank you for coming, and I want to thank all of our listeners for listening, and I want to wish them a great day. And as always, folks,
be legal!
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, featuring Michael Santucci from the law firm of Santucci Priori, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale, and practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation. They can be reached at 500law.com or at 954-351-7474. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to belegalbuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448 for Legal News and Review. Remember, be legal.